This is actually out in the solar system. All of these pictures that you see on the slideshow, somebody emailed them to me, and I just put them into my pictures. They titled this one, The Eye of God, and you can't see it on that screen up there, but there actually is an eyebrow even on it out there. But it's part of God's creation. This morning, January 6th of our Lord, 2008, we're going to talk about Genesis chapter 1, 2, 3, the beginnings. And as we started the year reading the Bible chronologically, the first day of the year, we read the first three chapters of the Bible, and I tried to develop the message from those three chapters. I put on the front of your bulletin way more text than I probably will the rest of the year, but it was kind of my summary of the key points of chapters 1, 2, 3 of Genesis. And the book begins with, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And as we look at our message this morning and talk about those chapters, in the beginnings, here's what we could look at. We could either look at the how or the who. And quite honestly, as I read those first couple chapters, being somebody who's construction-oriented and always wanting to fix things and want to understand how things work, I got much more entangled in the how, the days, the events, the stuff, than the who. And as I was putting all these sunrises into the computer and talking to the Lord, well, how do we develop a message on this, sir? And we came to the conclusion that we should talk more about the who than the how. I watched the debates last night. Any of you watch? I was interested in what went on in Iowa earlier this week, what went on in Wyoming yesterday. I'm curious about this event that's going on in our political realm. It's unique in all of history. As we watched everybody gather in one spot in Ohio, Iowa, for the caucus, that was a unique event where both the Democrats and the Republicans gathered to poll all their results in one spot, wasn't it? When I watched last night in that little town hall, all of the people who want to be our president a year from now were all in one building, all on one stage, all in one night. That's never really happened before. The unification that's going on in this election is unique. And I'm observing all of that. One of the men who did really well over here in Iowa was Mr. Huckabee. And Mr. Huckabee gets attacked regularly as a Baptist minister for his views on creation. And he does a very nice job whenever he's assaulted with the how, with reminding people it's the who. It's that God created this, not how it all went on. Now, that's a sunrise on the East Coast, looking out over the ocean. The three points to our message is the introduction to God, the introduction to man, and the introduction to Satan. Those are the three things. And when you look at the three chapters, that's really what it's about. Chapter 1 is the first introduction of God explaining himself to us. The second chapter is about the development of man. And the third chapter is where Satan enters the page. So those three are the main points, and we want to talk about this. Now, that's what I think the Garden of Eden should look like, even though that's in Western United States. It's not the way it looks in the Garden of Eden, but I kind of like that one with the river running through it. That's a sunset out in Wyoming, or sunrise out in Wyoming, and I used it to introduce us to God, the introduction to God. God reveals to us his personality, is your first blank on the back of there. God, in the first chapter of the Bible, begins to tell us what his personality is like. And when you're introduced to somebody at a New Year's Eve party or a Christmas party, or you're introduced to somebody for the first thing, that's one of the things that you're interested in. What is their personality like? We've got several young children in the audience today. And that's one of the funnest things of watching grandkids or kids grow up, is they begin to develop a unique personality. Now, they've got it all the time, and as it becomes known to you, it's enjoyable to experience, isn't it? God tells us about His personality in the first... He also tells us about His character. His character is your second blank, but that's an important thing to be introduced to when you're thinking of somebody. His character qualities. When you look at the things that He made them good. He actually made them to last a long time, and it had not it been for sin decaying and destroying things, the things that He created would last much longer than what they presently do. As you read those first couple chapters in Genesis, as we finished chapter 11, were you surprised at the ages of some of these people? You know? When I read that Noah didn't start having children until he was 500 years old, and he was a righteous and just, upright man, I thought, You know? Now, his boys, on the other hand, who we are all related to his three sons, in some way, shape, or form across the continent, everybody can trace their DNA probably back to those three boys and their wives. But they didn't wait so long or live so long, did they? When God originally designed this, His character and His personality showed up in these first few chapters of the Bible. Now, the next thing is His deepest desires are to relate and fellowship with the people He created. Relate and fellowship are your last blanks in that section. God's deepest desire in making us, whether it be the heavenly realms first, the spiritual realms first, as you read Job, you understand that on a regular basis, all the angels come in and talk to God about where they've been and what they've been doing. They actually report to the boss for a management meeting on a regular basis. God interacts and relates with all these angels. When we get this beautiful southern wind blowing in and the warm temperatures blowing up from where most of Deb's family lives, that's because God's angels, one of the four angels of the four winds, is actually bringing that up to us. That's what the Bible teaches us. It's not an unnatural phenomenon. It's a totally spiritual, divinely inspired phenomenon. And He communicates with them. He also wants to relate to you and me. And He wants to fellowship with you and me. That's why He made us. And it's important for us to be involved in this who, not how. Was it a literal 6 days? I don't know. God only knows. Was it a 1,000 years or 10,000 years in a day? I don't know. God only knows. The important part for me is who did it. As we enter into this new year, the intelligent design books are trying to be introduced in several different schools, which is close to but not exactly creation. It's not a biblical revealing of creation, but it's beginning to introduce the idea that maybe there is an intelligent designer that created the intelligent design that we see. And it's a new idea that they're trying to get back into our school system that has been removed in days gone by. In days gone by, it was clearly taught that God created it all. And there was a God. As you watched the debates with me last night, several of the people referred back to our Constitution, the inalienable rights given by a divine God to you and I. That our country was really founded on these principles, and some of the people running for president would like to move us back towards those founding father values. All of that brings us to the conclusion that God created this. Now, God reveals to us the origin of the creation. He actually did it. Origin is your blank. I want you to remember it's the who. Now, how God did that, your third blank there, how, is He spoke and it became reality. He just spoke it into reality. Now, that's important for you and I because He still speaks And if we will believe what he's saying to us, it can become reality in us. We can have new beginnings all the time by listening to his voice, responding to that in a trusting, faithful way, and we would have a different reality in our life. Now, this sunrise is through a hole in the rocks on the ocean, and this is the one I use to introduce man. Adam is your blank. Adam was made in the image of God. When God created mankind, Adam and Eve, he made them in the image of God. You and I are not physically born in that image, but could be reborn by the resurrection and death of sacrifice of Jesus Christ to be reborn, born again into that image. But he started that way. Adam was the first male, the first husband, and the first father. In understanding who he was a male. Now, years ago, that wouldn't be necessary to say, but in the culture that we live in today, in the same state where they're having primaries Tuesday, they are doing unions of same-sex people, saying that there's really no difference between male and female. Two males can marry, two females can marry in union, and it's not the way it is. Men are supposed to be men, and women are supposed to be women. And this was the first man. He was also the first husband. That was his primary role, and he became a father. But those are who he is, and we should define ourselves that way. Adam was given a job to do and a responsibility to make choices. When God created the garden, he moved Adam into the garden before he made Eve. Now, I've heard several Bible scholars say it's because guys are basically slow, and he needed a few years to get himself on track before God brought a woman into his life. Because of Well, anyway, we won't go that direction any further, but he had a job to do. He needed to name all the animals, didn't he? He had the responsibility of tending and taking care of the garden. He had a job, and he was allowed the privilege to make choices. When God put him there, he put the tree of knowledge of good and evil in the middle of the garden, and he said, "Now you can eat of that, but it'll kill you, or you can eat with this tree of life and you'll have eternal life, but you can eat any of the trees that you want, any of the veggies." I've seen several diets at the close of last year, Genesis diets, where people are going back to the Genesis pattern of fresh fruits and vegetables and eating those rather than the carnivorous lifestyle that we live in now. But Adam was a vegetarian. He tended the garden. That was his job, and he had the responsibility of making choices. Now, Adam also had some weaknesses. One of them was he avoided responsibility. That's your first blank. When responsibility came along in chapter 3, he avoided the opportunity to be involved. Secondly, he blamed others. Blamed is your second blank. He would hide rather than confront. Hide is your third blank. And lastly, he would make excuses rather than admitting the truth. So we men need to look at these weaknesses in our first male prototype and question our lives. Do we, as men, in our relationships with God, with our wives, with our children, do we avoid responsibility like Adam did? Get you in a lot of trouble. Do you blame other people? I was actually at an event over the holidays and somebody blamed me for the weather on one of the motorcycle trips we were on. I said, "Yeah, I know, I'm to blame." You know? Do you blame other people? Do you hide rather than actually speaking out the truth? Do you avoid? Those were weaknesses that Adam had that we need to look at in our lives. I say oftentimes in my counseling realm that one excuse is as good as another, but oftentimes people have excuses as to why they do things, rather than just saying, "I didn't do it, should have, wished I would have, but I didn't." Do you do that? Well, this beautiful sunrise over that field of sunflowers and beautiful purple flowers is the one I use to introduce Eve. Eve was also made in God's image, and in order to understand mankind, it's not just men. Woman is a part of that mankind. It's actually not complete to have just a male. You need a female to complete that. Now, Eve was the first female. She was the first wife. She was the first mother. She also was given responsibilities and allowed to make choices. Now, was Eve's job classification the same as Adam's? No. She had a different job classification, different responsibilities, different things that she was to be about than Adam did. And they commingled together to create mankind. Her responsibility was to be a helper to Adam. I've heard Bible scholars say that every guy needs help. I believe that. That's why I live with three women. Need lots of help. Need lots of help. And I do. And we do as men. And we need to understand that that's a part of God's design. And ladies need to understand that that's part of their life. Now, Eve too had weaknesses. She allowed her contentment to be undermined. When you look at the interaction between Satan and her in chapter 3, you begin to understand that she was not contented with who she was and what she had and what she understands. She wanted something that she didn't presently have. Now, I observe that all the time in our culture. Have any of you went to a friend's house and you see what they got for Christmas and all of a sudden you're not as contented with what you had before? Any of you? Julie and I went to a friend's house and they have this new 50-plus inch flat screen TV. And when we got home, Julie says, oh, I'd like to have one of those. That's really nice. Right? And I was sitting watching the playoff game last night and I was thinking, you know, 50-some inches wouldn't be bad. You know what I mean? One of the neighbors drove up into the driveway in his brand new Tahoe the day before my birthday with camouflage seat covers in it. Brand new. And I told him that I was going to have, tomorrow was my birthday, so I wasn't working. And he said, what are you going to be, 62? I said, no, 57. Didn't make my day. After I decided I wasn't going to punch him, I thought, that's really a nice truck. I might like to have a brand new Tahoe with camouflage seat covers, you know? Wouldn't be quite as boisterous as Rambo was, but it'd be camouflage, it'd be cool, right? It's easy not to be contented, isn't it, men and women? But you got to understand that that's a weakness in us, not to be contented. Eve acted impulsively without talking to God or her mate. And lastly, when confronted, she blamed. I want you to get into the habit, before you make a decision, to talk to God about it and to take the time and the patience to talk to your mate about it. Don't just pull the trigger on these things without discussing it with God and with your mate. And when you make a mistake, which you probably will in this year if you haven't yet, you probably will get one in this year, don't blame anybody else. Just face up to the fact. I did what I shouldn't have done. And I'm sorry that I did. But just be humble enough to acknowledge it and confess it. Don't blame other people. Now, this is a sunrise over the North Pole. And the day that I put that in there, it was 16 below outside. I was quite thankful to be working in my office that day. And this is the sunrise that I use for the introduction of Satan. Satan's plan against us is this. He wants to develop doubt in you to where you would question God's word and his goodness. Doubt is your first blank on that section of the outline. I want you to be reading the scriptures with me and to be reading devotionals with me, like the Daily Light and Chuck Colson's Devotions for People with Purpose, to actually be putting into your lives biblical truth and other people's perspectives. There are a tremendous number of great biblical authors out there who could help us not to doubt God, but to trust Him. There are great testimonies written in books. Last year when Julie and I were reading Beth Moore and Oswald Chambers, there were consistent testimonies of these faithful believers that encouraged us not to doubt God. But left alone in the cold refines of Illinois when it's 16 below, it's easy for me to doubt. Is it you? This is one of the strategies that he uses. The second one that I noted was discouragement, where we would look at the problems rather than God. Do you ever notice that tactic in your life? All you can see is what's wrong. The problem rather than see the good in it. It was fun to give you testimonies of Chris's endeavor in the hospital and Lori and Rick's testimony of seeing God in the midst of this challenge and not getting discouraged by it or disappointed in it, but actually having hope and not doubting. The faithfulness that we had standing around that bed praying with the surgeon before he went in, there was no doubt that this was the right thing to do. This was the right path to do. There was a complete unity and trust there. But God will not always force you to see that. It will take your interest in Him and your active pursuit of Him not to end up in doubt or discouragement. And the last one is diversion. We see the wrong things as attractive. Satan has a tremendous diversionary tactic. In the military, we used to do that all the time. We'll create a diversion. When you watch some of the movies about the bank robbers or the Ocean's 11, 12, 13, 14, 15s, they create a diversion while they're doing some activity over here. Satan will create diversions in your life. He'll get you more interested in the how than the who. He'll get you more interested in what you need to do than the resources of His life within you as you do it. He will get you diverted by all the stuff that your friends have, the keeping up with the Joneses thing. That's not a new tactic. He used that in the Garden of Eden in chapter 3, the diversionary tactics. Defeat. He will get you to feel like a failure so you won't even want to try. My wife and I were taking one of our daily walks this week. The other two things that I've reinstated into my life is walking and drinking water. Drinking 2 quarts of water a day and walking 3 miles or so a day. I encourage you to do that. You should walk. Now, all of us in the activities of life walk back and forth and put in miles, right? Those of you who work in stores or your bosses in stores, it's hard to stay off your feet because you're walking all the time. But still, take a period of time, 30 minutes or so, and go for a consistent walk. On one of those walks, Julie said, "Are you stuck? It looks like you're stuck on this one specific issue. You're not moving forward." There are times in my life when I feel defeated and I stop moving forward, I stop trying. It's not a new thing. It's happened before. My sister could probably give you more stories than I want to hear. But it happens. And it probably will happen to you in different areas of life that you'll feel defeated and you'll stop trying. It's one of his tactics. Don't buy into it. When you realize you're stopped, just get started. And like any new exercise program or any new activity, just start it slow. Just start moving forward again. If you discover it's been weeks and you haven't read your chronological Bible, figure out what day it is. Look at that bookmark and start again. Right? If you realized it's been 48 hours since you've had an honest, deep, personal conversation with God in prayer, don't feel defeated. Just start. Stop. And get back into that prayer. If you find all you're hearing in your head are secular songs, tune into some worship stuff. That new iPod that all of you got for Christmas? Go to the worship playlist, or the, right? But put some start there. Don't get defeated. Don't stop. I think beginnings are like sunsets. They happen like sunrises. That's what I meant to say. Beginnings are like sunrises, not sunsets. I guess biblically sunsets are beginnings, isn't it? Biblically, the beginning of the day is sunset. Not like us Greeks do, sunrise. So I guess I was biblically correct, although not socially relevant at that point. But beginnings happen all the time. So get restarted. Well, here's the conclusion. That's three eagles flying up north. And somebody sent it to me, an email, and it's the smile of God. Can you see the two baby eagles as eyes and a big, big fat mama eagle as the big grin? Now, who's out there at sunrise to take these pictures? I don't know. Not me. But that's the smile of God, three eagles flying over the swamp. Now, the conclusion of this is God came to earth in person. He personally came to earth. He consistently smiles on you and I, just like those three eagles, wanting us to rise up on the wings of eagles and relate to Him. You can know in a very personal way this God who created us. He created you with His deepest desires to relate to you and to fellowship to you. The Creator wants to be involved in your life. He wants you to relate to Him. That's why He made you. As we move into this year, 2008, here's what I want you to do. I want you to make a volitional choice, an intentional choice to respond to Him. He gives you the responsibility to seek Him. If you seek me, I'll find you. But you need to make that volitional choice. If you're like me, there are people in our lives that last year I didn't spend as much time with as I think I should have or could have. So this year I'm going to initiate contacts with them. I actually call people and I say, hey, can you find a date in this month where your wife and I can go out to dinner? Right? Because I'm initiating, introducing relationship with them. Do that with the good Lord. Initiate relationship with Him. He wants to relate to you. He wants to fellowship with you. His Son has provided everything for that. He came in person, walked in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve, and He wants to come today in person and walk through this life with you. Invite Him in.